Good evening, this is Gary Kavner. I'm here today with my friend and colleague Michael Dwyer. Today is Sunday, the 26th of the 1st, which means we are blessedly close to the election finishing. However, until it does, we're duty-bound to talk about it until the words and figures make no sense, but merely fall from our lips like the rumblings of a madman.
Okay.
Was that too esoteric?
It's a bit King Lear, but fire ahead.
So the first story we have is the polls, of course. There's a new poll that came out today. It was in the Business Post. We'll be running through the figures on that. It seems to back up some of the polls we've done, but I think the real interesting thing from it is the rise in Sinn Féin. That's pretty remarkable in two polls now, so it may actually not be a fluke. Then we want to talk about Leo and his little issue with the question of whether or not he's ever done drugs. And then finally, I want to talk about, or we want to talk about, because Michael is a person.
I'm a person too.
I mean, well, when did we change the laws on homosexuality and we recognised you as people?
Well, I was thinking more of the gender recognition. I think everybody's a person now. There's a lady getting married to a Boeing jumbo jet. So that must mean that jumbo jets can be persons as well.
I think that's what you refer to as a size queen, Michael.
Or just somebody who likes to travel.
No, and the third thing is we want to talk about this Feminist Ireland 2020 pledge, a manifesto that came out that various people signed up to, including Micheál Martin, acting on behalf of Fianna Fáil.
Mm-hmm.
It's a nonsensical pledge for someone like Martin to sign, or for Fianna Fáil to sign. Because it's a 35-point manifesto that touches on nearly every aspect of Irish life. Many of them in ways absolutely contrary to what Fianna Fáil say their policy actually is. But I'm much less interested in the actual manifesto. I'm more interested in how it's a wonderful demonstration of the fact that Irish politics just aren't really serious in the same way that like American politics or British politics is serious, and politics is an important thing, and you should ask informed questions, and we're just like, nah.
Yeah.
Just do things. Who cares?
Be all right.
But the polls. Let's go to the polls first, Michael.
Now, the first thing to say here is, this is a Red Sea poll, and if memory serves, Red Sea has been the polling organisation which has historically had Sinn Féin on a lower percentage than the other polls did. So, that being the case, the fact that on this, Sinn Féin are up from, I think it was, it's hard to read because the graphic is not brilliant, from 11%, and they're on 19%. So, there's a remarkable degree of consistency, actually, in the last polls. Last three polls now, all of them have Sinn Féin on 19 or 20%. So, that's a really consistent showing. Now, on one of those that had them down one from 20 to 19, so it was down, but the others have them surging. So two polls have them surging, one has them becalmed or not really going anywhere or slightly.
Yeah, behind. So we actually have two polls that came out today. We have the Red Sea poll in the Business Post, and we also have the Ireland Thinks poll in the Irish Daily Mail.
And they have Sinn Féin on 20% also.
I mean, all the polls, Fianna Fáil, lead party.
The Ireland Thinks, they have Fianna Fáil on 27. The Red Sea have them on 26.
Both have Fine Gael falling. Ireland Thinks have them on 22. Red Sea have them on 23. Sinn Féin up. Sinn Féin up big.
And the other point there is that that not only are Fine Gael on 23, but they're down, I mean, what are we down, like 6-7 points there? Again, hard to read it here. But again, so one thing is consistent, whatever about the individual numbers, on all the polls we have precipitous drops for Fine Gael support. One poll has Fianna Fáil very strongly up 7 points. The rest of them show in the middle there, some 25, 26, 27 points. Sinn Féin surging. Now, one other interesting thing here on the Red Sea poll is Labour down to 4%.
Which is not good. That sort of indicates a a collapse of core vote. Better on the Ireland thinks poll, though. I mean, they're down to 6 there. And some of the other polls were also showing Labour on around 4%. But they definitely want to get in. You want to be above, well, I mean, you want to be as high as you can go. You definitely want to be above 6.
So, a couple of obvious questions that you suggest themselves for this is, can Fine Gael turn it around? I mean, what's the I think, and this is obviously to an extent based on also the fact that in all the polls we show very significant drops in support, personal support for Leo. In one of the polls, they had him down 16% personal support for Leo. Now, I can't imagine it's any different anywhere else than around where I am. We have the Fine Gael local candidates, but all over the gaff, we have the Fine Gael poster with Leo smiling out benignly at the people. I'm wondering if this is now a strategy which they are regretting or have regretted, and in fact are going to take him out of the campaign and use him in a different way, because now, hard to know. A lot of people, I think, were surprised that he did as well as he did in the debate. The debate itself was a bit of a damp squib. It wasn't like the Kenny Ahern debate, where Ahern, who was not a good debater, not a good impromptu speaker, clearly came out the winner. The other problem with debates, Gary, I think, I don't know what your view of it is, this is a debate that goes on for an hour and a half, 2 hours. It's a piece of theatre, you know? And I can sit there and I with my adjudicator's head on me, looking at it purely as a debate, and give him, oh, he wins marks there and there and there. Now, Martin won some, there are parts of the debate certainly which Martin won, parts which Leo won. But what that ultimately means for the electorate is actually far less clear than deciding if this was a school debate or a college debate, who would have come out the winner. Because Leo might win on a whole series of topics that the voters don't care about. But it could be that on the 4 or 5 things that the voters cared about, Martin came out winning 4-1. And if that's the case, then the debate actually works out as being a strong positive for Martin. So it's really only a long time after the debate, and I don't know if anybody's ever bothered to properly do polling post-debate and feed it into exit numbers. But what particularly in a debate like that where there was no clear-cut winner or loser, you might say, well, he stylistically did better. Also, there was an expectation, I would say, that Martin would do better, because Martin is perceived, and I would believe I would agree with that, a better debater than Leo. Leo's a bit hot and cold. Sometimes he can be very poor, but sometimes he can be very good. I thought one interesting bit about it, Gary, from conversations we had before, they had obviously decided one of the things they were going to do with Leo was humanize. Humanize. And that meant, so, for example, he apologised. He's talking about the healthcare and the failures of healthcare, and he apologises for it. And he did this, you know the old line, if you can do sincerity, you can do anything. He did the sincerity very well. Came across as empathetic. So that was an important thing for him. I think that if he hadn't done that, that could have been a disaster.
A large part of that, I think, was him saying that he knew he could sometimes come across as if he didn't care, and then spinning it into, you know, it's the actions that count. And I show I care for my actions. Very, very well done. But yeah, the debate is... to go back to your early question, the first thing you said, can Fine Gael turn this around? I think there are enough polls out now that we can say the general trend is Fianna Fáil, the largest party.
Yes.
Sinn Féin surging, Green coming up.
Yes.
And the other parties either not moving or falling. I've was talking to a fair amount of Fianna Fáilers this week, because I was calling around about the pledge and about a couple of other things. So I had a chance to meet and chat with some of them. A surprising amount of them. More than I would in a general week, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to say there's an overwhelming sense of arrogance amongst them, but there is a bit of an overwhelming sense of arrogance amongst some of them. A sort of, our time has come, this is the end of history, Leo is gone, we will be in, we'll build some coalition, we'll throw them whatever the fuck they want, and then we'll just rule. And that's a great attitude to bollocks things up totally, somehow.
If they were on 42% or 45%, well, understandable perhaps. But the fact is, even if it was on, say, the Ireland thinks, there's a 5% gap. They're at 27%. The highest that they have is 32, but the other three all have them in the mid-20s, 26%, 25%, 26%, 27%. And I think that one of the issues here is, against a Fine Gael, which is dropping precipitously, and in the context of most people probably thinking they would like some kind of government that will not take 9 months to form, the fact that Fianna Fáil are not pulling away more decisively, I think it reflects the problem that Fianna Fáil have as well as Fine Gael. Can Fine Gael come back? I don't see where the news is going to come from. I don't see where now the space in which they can turn the ship around is getting smaller and smaller. We're now down to effectively 12 days of campaigning.
I think in many ways, actually, their hope of this turning around is probably going to be effectively Martin's strategy of replacing Fine Gael.
Yeah.
Of just don't fuck up.
Yeah.
And see what they do.
But I think that's the problem. Now, I don't, maybe I'm being overly critical, but I don't have any sense that Fianna Fáil is offering something which feels in any sense markedly different or fresh.
It isn't.
There's no sense of a, they actually, the last two manifestos they had some, whether you agreed or disagreed with them, had some fairly interesting proposals about serious reform of the system. This doesn't seem to be doing it. This, to me, is the kind of campaign that Fine Gael ran for years and years, which was, we will basically do what Fianna Fáil do, but we will do it better. We will be better managers. We will be more prudent. We'll be more careful. We will care more about this group or that. You know, but ultimately, we'll do the same stuff. We'll just do it better. And that vision thing, as they used to call it. There's no sense of a vision about it. And you're 5 points ahead. Now, maybe it's because in their hearts they're thinking, my God, there's a chance we could actually win this. Micheál could end up as Taoiseach. Nobody ever believed that that could happen. Isn't it wonderful? I would hold my breath to cool my porridge for the time being. They really should be. Just look at the last few weeks. It has been horrible for Fine Gael. And stuff, to be fair, as much as one doesn't like to be, a lot of stuff has happened. At the level of crimes, murders, and things.
It seems to be something horrible. Every day.
Which is not something which is directly manageable or controllable by the government. These are what Harold Macmillan, when he was asked once what could change things, and he said, events, dear boy, events. And there are lots of events happening, and all of them are bad news for Fine Gael. And yet, Fianna Fáil has not shown any capacity. Sinn Féin is coming off the back of a very poor local election result. A general sense, which was beginning to coalesce, that Mary Lou had simply not moved on in the way that people had expected her to from Gerry Adams, that she hadn't got that bounce, she hadn't the kick, that they weren't going the place. And yet, here we are, Sinn Féin is the big story, really.
I mean, Sinn Féin are the big story here. But I mean, there's there's a couple of things about that. One is that from the polling we've seen, not on who are you going to vote for, but how satisfied are you with the current direction of the country, with the current government, that's cratered.
75% of people polled in one of the polls said they wanted a change of government.
So Fianna Fáil are presenting themselves as the change of government, but they've also been propping up the current government for years, which makes that a bit of a difficult sell. And I think there is a bit of an arrogance here that we are, you know, this is our election, we'll take it. And because of that, it seems like they're trying to coast, but also not paying attention to things that they should be. And the pledge we're going to talk about later, I think, is a great example of that. It's just, we didn't pay attention to this, we just did it. Because, like, what's it going to hurt? She's going nuts.
I don't know. I haven't been talking to as many FFers this week as you have. If that's what they're doing, I'm genuinely surprised. Because I would have thought that Fianna Fáil should be in the position, and this won't mean much to Gary, but to the listener it might, they should be like a Liverpool supporter. And Liverpool are a hell of a lot farther ahead of the league than Fianna Fáil are in the polls. And yet, until very, very recently, they were just refusing to admit they were going to win because of the terror of their past experience. And I would have thought that Fianna Fáilers would be like that. Oh, God, don't say that. Don't say that.
That is the correct response to an incredibly good poll. But God, it's going to be much closer than that. Because you don't want people thinking, oh, they're a shoo-in to win and then not turning up.
Which is what Martin said after the very first poll, which had them on 32.
But I will make this point. I have primarily been talking to elected representatives of Fianna Fáil. It's entirely possible that the on-ground feeling is very different, and I would expect it to be. But, like that. So, we have people wanting a new thing. Sinn Féin is the largest of the parties that would enable them to do that. Labour are still sort of unsuitable for the same reasons that many people think of Fianna Fáil as unsuitable. The Greens are painfully middle class.
Painfully middle class and painfully urban.
And painfully urban, yeah.
I don't think their Mayo candidate did them a whole lot of good.
No, sharpen the guillotines. Good video. But also Sinn Féin historically underperformed their polling averages.
That's
quite substantial.
That is true. And that's one of the things we're going to see. I think one of the interesting things that we're going to see in the next 10 days tactically is how does Fianna Fáil speak to those Sinn Féin voters? Because if it is the case, maybe it won't be this time. It's always, everything happens, it's the same way until it stops happening the same way. So maybe it really, but if it happens the same as it did in the past, 20% could go back down to 14%. Now those votes will have to go somewhere. Now Fianna Fáil will obviously be eyeing some of those votes covetously. There are some of those votes that are a lot more green than they are red. Particularly, I would say, outside of Dublin, but even in Dublin, you have Sinn Féin, that the division between the more left-wing element, and I would say that it's true, isn't it, Gary, that the average Sinn Féin voter tends to be less left-wing than the politicians, the head of the party.
Well, I mean, we'll get more data from this election, which is great. But from the last election, Sinn Féin had the largest division between what the party actually believes, as in what it votes on and what its stated policies are, and what its average voter wants. Its average voter tends to be working class, left-wing economically, right-wing socially.
In other words, they're the kind of voter that, particularly in Dublin, once upon a time would have been voting Fianna Fáil, and for whatever reasons have stopped. The question is, is that resistance because of the crash still so strong that these people simply will not return to Fianna Fáil or go to them? Or can Fianna Fáil woo them? And I think that it'll be interesting to see. I think they have to. But whatever votes they're getting from the disillusioned Fine Gaelers, they have got. Mm. I don't think there's much more there. For Fine Gael now, one of the big issues will be getting their votes out. They have to maximize whatever vote they have and make sure that they all get out and vote.
There is an interesting thing at the current polling. Is that the current polling would seem to be Fianna Fáil-led government.
Yeah.
However, a current polling, you could make a Fine Gael Green Sinn Féin coalition.
Yeah.
And I had this debate with someone in Fine Gael recently. You were there, actually. Where I was saying, they were saying if Sinn Féin is required to go into government, Fianna Fáil are going to take it. And I made the point that I actually think if the numbers fall, it's way more likely Fine Gael will go in with Sinn Féin than it is the Fianna Fáil will go in with Sinn Féin.
I agree with that. And I have myself and a mutual friend of ours have been saying, I can remember back before the marriage referendum being on Mark Coleman, we were talking about just general sort of political weak thing. And we both said that we thought that the more likely party to go into government with Sinn Féin was Fine Gael. Everybody else looked at us like we were mad people with horns growing out of our. What are you talking about? And if you say this to Sinn Féin, to Fine Gael voters on the ground, they're horrified by the idea.
Mm.
But I think it's
as our party activists.
Yeah, but I think when push comes to shove, I think that it's a bigger risk for Fianna Fáil.
I think it's not a policy issue.
Yeah.
It's a cultural issue of how the party operates. And Fianna Fáil's culture and the people involved in it would make it harder to align with Sinn Féin, despite what some of their TDs will say. Whereas Fine Gael, everyone will say it's a terrible idea until it happens, and then it will be a tragic necessity for the stability of the government.
Also, if you're talking politically, the political cultures, shall we say, at the level of social vision, you'd say that Fine Gael are closer to Sinn Féin and to the Greens than Fianna Fáil are.
Well, as we found out today when it turned out that they had kicked out the son of a former minister. Which minister was it? John?
He's running in Louth. He's running as an independent. He lost a seat in 2016. I can't remember the man's name, but he's running as an independent, and his son is a member of Young Fine Gael.
Yes, and he got kicked out for running some ads on Facebook for his father, John Perry.
Yeah, that's it, Perry.
So his son got kicked out for running some ads on Facebook for his father, under €100. Wouldn't be surprised if the father literally doesn't know how to run an ad.
Yeah,
and now with Facebook, if you run political ads, you need a verified account behind it.
Mm-hmm.
So his father could have seemed to went like, Jude, could you just, use my card? But like, I don't have an account, or I don't know how to do this. Could you do it?
Could do it for me.
And then it turned out that he was removed from the party. And then it turned out that the executive of Young Fine Gael wasn't informed. Some of them sit on the executive of Fine Gael, and they weren't informed.
Mm-hmm.
So now it doesn't seem like anyone knows who actually ejected him from the party. And he's over in America, and they just sent him a text basically going, you're gone. And the guy is a son of a former minister, was the guy who set up their first Young Fine Gael group in Northern Ireland, which, props to him. It shows he's fairly involved with the party, if you're going to bother to do that.
Yes.
And then it's just like, no, you're gone, we don't care. And there's that little bit of an authoritarian, this came from the top, you just do it.
Una voce, un duce. But that's true, I think, but there's also, if you...
Then again, Martin has gone against that culture in Fianna Fáil before, and he's won. Or sorry, the culture of members thinking they own the party, Martin has gone against that, and he's won most times.
Yeah, I think that the culture of Fianna Fáil with the membership is that they will disagree with you, dislike you, and... But their ultimate question is, are you going to win? Will you get me into power? And if you do that, then we'll put up with you. If he fails to get him into power, then he will not be long for the world. But I also, if you look at just, say environmental policies, which obviously will be a big issue if the Greens are coming in, Sinn Féin will be on board with those. And I think Fine Gael will be more able to deal with that kind of policy than Fianna Fáil would be, because I think Fine Gael are increasingly an urban party, a Dublin party. If you looked at the figures, particularly, say, for the regional breakdowns, like Fianna Fáil is way ahead in Munster, for example, which is unusual.
I mean, the Green Party will say something about, like, the emissions of the national herd, and Fine Gael will go, well, if we have to. Whereas Fianna Fáil would be a little bit more of a, maybe in 10 years, lads.
Yeah, let's hang on.
They're dying off, and over time, they won't be a voting bloc, and then we'll move on this.
We'll give it a bit of time. But also on issues about education, social issues around gender, issues around hate speech, this kind of thing. The remaining hot-button social issues, I think there's going to be a greater degree of inter-party sympathy between, say, Fine Gael, Greens, and Sinn Féin than there would be in Fianna Fáil. Fianna Fáil still has those backwoodsmen, those proper old-fashioned social conservatives, both at the top and the bottom of the party, who would feel an awful lot more uncomfortable with that. Then there is also the final element that both Sinn Féin are the opposition to Fianna Fáil in the competition to be the Republican Party. And inevitably, if that's your core identity, which it is for Fianna Fáil, then Sinn Féin's pretense to be that is a base, visceral attack on them. But then flip the perspective also. If you're in Sinn Féin, I would say the perception of the danger of going into coalition with Fianna Fáil is much higher than the danger of going in with Fine Gael. You're not going to confuse your brand with your voters with Fine Gael and the Greens. But there's a serious risk that you may get brand confusion if you go in with Fianna Fáil. And let's face it, if you look at the history of Fianna Fáil and coalition partners, it's not good. What they did to the PDs, what they did to the Labour Party, what they did to the Greens at different times, they have a capacity to go in, to take you into government with them, and then they just you don't come out, you don't survive it. Mm. You just don't survive it well. And so for Sinn Féin, maybe worried about the dangers to them, the existential threat that Fianna Fáil represents to them, being governed with Fianna Fáil.
Anyway, I mean, the numbers will dictate how this falls. Yeah. If there is a possibility of Fine Gael going in with Sinn Féin and the Greens, that will be interesting. Maybe even the Social Democrats, but they will probably be down to two, possibly three seats. Well, three would be a movement up. Labour, I don't think, would go into that coalition. That would be dangerous.
I think if Fianna Fáil want to avoid that, Fianna Fáil just have to go up. To avoid that scenario, Fianna Fáil have to score more than 27 and Sinn Féin have to score less. Fianna Fáil have to be getting up, breaking 30.
Mm. I mean, if Fianna Fáil get up to, let's say, 50 seats.
Well, I think that would be a bad result for Fianna Fáil as it stands. I mean, they're on 45 at the moment. Increasing only by 5, I think they would say that that's not a good result. There's the independents, of course.
They're polling, I think, about 11%.
And looking at the rural independents, they look fairly solid.
Rural independents will come in on things as needed, though. You've got the likes of Lowry, who'll get elected and will support whoever's in power as long as he gets what he wants.
Lowry, Matty McGrath, the Healy Rays, Michael Fitzmaurice.
People whose job is to get things for their local constituency and have become very adept at doing it.
Marion Harkin is polling very well and looks like taking a seat. That would increase their numbers there.
So, I mean, moving on from the poll.
Uh-huh.
What was the second thing we were going to discuss?
Well, the other two things, Leo and the Smoky.
Oh, yeah, Leo in the last debate. The only... I did not watch the debate because I don't really care about debates. I find live TV debates largely useless. I would rather read the transcript of it And even, I mean, beyond that, I would rather just read the manifesto. I don't find them terribly appealing. But the only part I did see was Leo taking about 12 seconds to answer the question, have you ever done drugs?
Yeah.
And it's a weird situation because when Leo says he's done drugs, I don't believe him.
You see, that's the funny thing.
Most politicians, they say no, and you're like, I don't believe that. But he says he has. And I sort of go, everything I've heard about you from people who were in college with you and before just paints you as the most, just no, not really.
When you said this to me before, I was thinking, immediately my thought came into my head, can he be sued for defamation for saying, I don't believe that the Taoiseach used illegal drugs?
I have a theory that years ago, when he was being interviewed by Hot Press, which is when he first said it.
I thought Hot Press immediately.
Yeah. He said it trying to be cool,
yeah.
Even though he's never done drugs. And that's why he's still so stunned by this question. Because he's just like, oh, Jesus, like I said it once.
Yeah.
Will you not let it go? And so he has to constantly lie about his drug use. Because it doesn't exist.
It's something very dangerous about when politicians do interviews with Hot Press and decide they want to be cool. I mean, even the great ones. I don't know if you've ever read it. If you haven't, you should do. Charlie Haughey did an interview.
Charlie Haughey was the one that immediately came to mind.
And, you know, you think, oh, Charlie, really?
That was like mid-1980s.
Yeah.
When Hot Press was actually...
Oh, it's a big deal.
Edgy.
Yeah. Back in the John Waters days.
Mm.
It was a proper thing. I used to read him avidly. And Haughey did this incredible interview. So, in a way, completely Charlie, in some ways, completely fake as well, but maybe that was Charlie. But really, he was down with the young people, you know? He was effing and blinding because, you know, that's the young people like that kind of thing.
Do you remember when, was it Eamon Dunphy? And it was from a Hot Press article. And it ended up in court over something else. And they were asking him, did you not once give an interview where you called Fintan O'Toole and told him he better watch his back and that you were going to, I quote, break his fucking legs? Hot Press used to be quite good.
Yeah. You name McCann at the back. Used to do this thing on the back, which was always entertaining. It was good. It was a good thing. And it did all sorts of things. Very bad things, of course. It used to advertise for hookups and things where people could meet. And...
Shocking.
They ended up being sued. The government took them to task over that, and that was one of their big revenue streams, and I think that was a problem for them. But,
and now they're just sort of totally irrelevant.
Utterly.
Utterly irrelevant.
Just seek trends of glory. But that is the thing about Leo, the funny thing is, some people took that in a completely different, that he was trying to remember, oh God, what drug did I admit to taking?
Yeah. There's,
I just, it was, I cannot, and I've tried, I cannot get in my head a picture of like a 23-year-old Leo dropping tabs of E and really getting onto the dance floor of the George and really giving it large. I mean, I just can't see it. It doesn't work for, I imagine him, he's in a suit still, you know?
Like, there are certain politicians in the Dáil or the Seanad who, if they're asked if they did drugs and they said yes or no, you'd kind of go, oh, that's like, you've clearly done drugs. But with Leo, it's just a sort of, I've done drugs. It's like saying he has a Canadian girlfriend.
Yeah.
She doesn't go to this school.
Yeah.
I don't think you've ever done drugs.
But she's real. She lives in Calgary, and I have her address, and she likes curling. Oh, yeah.
It's sure. Just sort of like, I did drugs. You're like, sure you didn't, nerd.
Poor old Leo. Damned if I don't you know did, why. He damned just, if he just, didn't.
You said it, and I was just like, I just don't believe him. Which is a ridiculous thing about a politician, because...
Does anybody care?
The only thing that makes it important is the inability of someone to answer it, or the potential for them to lie about it.
Yeah.
Like, there are several TDs who would not want to be asked that question, because they have, and they don't want to admit it. But they'd also be worried that if they lied and said they hadn't, that it wouldn't be terribly easy for that to come out, or terribly difficult for that to come out.
Also,
and then you've lied.
Yeah, and also, a lot of people are not very good at lying. And they'll do their thing and people will be watching them. Yeah.
I mean, it's weird. For all the public perception of politicians as liars, you are right. A lot of them are terrible liars.
Well, that's human.
I mean, it doesn't stop some of them.
No.
But
that's also human beings.
They're sort of blessed by the fact that very rarely do they end up in situations where it's a single member of the media against them for a long period of time. Because they're the hardest situations to get through. A media scrum where you have 40 different journalists asking you questions is fairly easy to control. Because you can pick and choose who you're going to answer. But you don't see, there was a show on BBC, I think the 60s and 70s. And it was, I think, a professor of history and a professor of economics. And they would just drill ministers. I cannot remember what it was called. But it was a long form, single shot.
I remember a show which was on London Weekend Television, and the interviewer was a man called Brian Waldron, who was a professor, I think, from the LSE. It was an hour-long show. And it was two chairs. That's all it was. Him in one chair, two black chairs, face to face for an hour. And this was a very, very, very informal. He did it. Actually, the first guy to do it was Peter Jay. Peter Jay, who later went on to be, he was married to a daughter of Jim Callaghan, who was leader of the Labour Party, the Prime Minister. And he went on to become ambassador to the United States. And then after him, Brian Waldron, who was an academic. Well, Jay was a kind of an academic as well. He was an economist, I think. Jay was responsible for bringing monetarism, the monetarist stuff over. The first monetarists, actually, in Britain at that time were in the Labour Party. Dennis Healey was a sort of kind of a proto-monetarist. I remember Thatcher doing it. I think it might be the show you're talking about. There was a very famous instance where John Knott, who was the Tory minister in defence, and Robin Day actually also was one of the interviewers, and said, if you don't mind me asking, you are a here today and gone tomorrow politician, and Knott just stood up, took the mic off and walked out. Wouldn't take it from a failed politician like Day. But that was a grilling, and you really got a sense. These people either knew what they were talking about or they didn't.
Yeah, but you're not sure. It's very easy.
You don't get to the top, at least in those days, you didn't get to the top end of the Tory party or the Labour party without knowing stuff.
No. Whereas now it's a lot easier to insulate people. And you give these panel shows are fine, media scrums are fine. What you don't want is a single journalist.
Yeah, because you don't want someone to smell. Like the famous, you remember the famous Paxman interview with.
The most awkward interview ever recorded. Jesus Christ, that was.
Who would not? It was a question about. He was Home Secretary at the time it had happened, and whether or not he had given an instruction to the prison officer or the governor of a prison about something anyway. What was it?
Michael Howard.
Michael Howard, something of the night.
Yeah. He asked him the same question more than a dozen times.
Yeah, just again and again and again. Now that's horror. That's really, you're going to be.
It's a minute and a half, which if you're in a one-on-one conversation is a very long amount of time.
But that's to my point. He desperately didn't want to say yes or no because they'll catch him. And politicians try their living best not to tell a straight-out lie because they know it's just really, really hard. That's why I remember when Bill Clinton, do you remember? You don't remember, but you remember the story. When Bill Clinton was asked about Monica Lewinsky, and he said, I did not have sexual relations with that woman. I was talking to an American, I was living away at the time, and I was talking to an American friend of mine, lawyer, and I said, well, That's it then. He didn't. They got the story wrong, because there's no way he would come out with such an unequivocal no if he hadn't done it. Because the lesson in America from Nixon, it's not the thing that sinks you. It's the lie that sinks you. It's the cover up. He, of course, later on equivocated by saying, this is Bill Clinton talking on the drugs issue. He had marijuana, but he didn't inhale. And with Monica, yes, he had a blowjob, but that's not sex. And all I could think of at the time was, well, God bless you, Bill, you're having a better life than most of us. You don't count that. But Leo didn't even say, I didn't inhale. He wasn't even out. I don't think anybody cares, because I think that even though it's changed a little bit, Irish voters don't really care about the private lives of their politicians.
They don't, but there is. I mean, this kind of leads us into our next point. The unseriousness of Irish politics in general. I mean, you wouldn't get a Jeremy Paxman-style interview in this country, because I don't really think people care. You get some people who care, but not. We don't have any. Let me bias that slightly less. Can you think of any political reporter or presenter or who is anywhere in the same level as like a Paxman or an Andrew O'Neill?
Right now?
Yeah, I mean, there are four or five interviewers in Britain at the minute across the major networks who will grill you.
I would say that we are in a poor enough moment. There are some decent ones, reasonable ones. Like, I think Miriam, Primetime. Who are the two principals in Primetime? Miriam O'Callaghan and... what's his name? You know what I mean, anyway. I think they're pretty decent. But I would say, looking back at my lifetime, when I think of people like Brian Farrell or John Bowman, they weren't confrontational in their style, but they were very, very well informed. They were bright, and they would go fairly deep in. But right now, I mean, in comparison, we certainly don't have a Paxman. I'm not sure if Paxman is necessarily the pattern of what it should be.
But
someone like Robin Day, someone like Brian Waldron, somebody like Andrew O'Neill. I mean, Andrew O'Neill, I think both of us saw the interview he did with Ben Shapiro. And that was just a revelation.
He's an exceptionally fine interviewer. And he is like that to everyone, regardless of how much he agrees with
actually,
them.
There's a guy, now that I think of it, if we want to be fair, Vincent Brown.
Brown, for all that I think I never agreed with a single political thing he ever said, was actually fairly solid.
If you didn't agree with Brown's politics, that just meant you weren't hanging around long enough. Because Vincent, if you hang around enough, Vincent would at some stage come close to your politics. And Vincent was not a static object politically. But the reason that he reminds me is because one of the things about Andrew O'Neill, back in the day he was editor of the Sunday Times, he's been in politics and in journalism a long time. He remembers a lot. He knows a lot. Vincent is the similar kind of creature.
I did recently see, it was from the Vincent Brown Show, someone had posted up a clip online, and it was of a... it was in the Senate election just after the sort of crash, when Fianna Fáil were running a lot of independent candidates.
Yes.
And it was a potential senator, someone who was coming over, and she had been working in Brussels, and she had done advisory work with Fianna Fáil, and then had moved to the overarching European party they're on, and she tried to bullshit Brown. She just platitudes, like she was a factory that made Hallmark cards. And she was like, well, the most important thing is the future. And he's like, oh God, is it? Have you ever heard a single politician say, the past? And then she's like, well, we've got to step up to the plate, Vince. And he's like, what plate? What are you talking about? And then she was like, well, you know, we've got to get the bankers in, and, you know, we've got to have people looking at it. And she goes, it did happen. It happened in the finance committee. And she goes, well, you know, I would have had it open to the public. And he just stops and he goes, not only was it open to the public, it was televised.
Yes.
And there's just this wonderful look on her face of... And then she just launches right back into the spiel.
Yeah, yeah.
And there are certain... He was very good with politicians who thought they were more capable than they were, regardless of what side they were on.
Also,
because you could just immediately tell, like, he thinks you're an idiot.
He remembered everything, which is horrible if you're a politician. Because every politician who's been in the business long time will have done or said something stupid about something that you're talking about at some stage. And but, you know, it's gone. Nobody remember. It was in some minor, oh, God, no, summer school in Longford in 1979. No, Vincent remembers it. But, John, didn't you say, oh, God. So, Vincent Brown, but sadly, Vincent has gone from us. And I thought at the latter end of his career, it had gone more into burlesque than it was about current affairs. It was more entertainment than anything else. But the seriousness, yeah, I mean, you're talking about, just, I think you should explain a little bit what this manifesto is.
If you're listening to the last show, particularly, we talked about it in some detail. It's a 35-point Feminist Ireland manifesto, which Micheál Martin signed on behalf of Fianna Fáil. It contains many policies that are contrary to what Fianna Fáil say they want to bring in. They signed this in the middle of the election. They had their manifesto launch on Friday. I listened to the Q&A. And no one asked. No one even bothered. Now, this story definitely got out because I wrote about it in Gripped. Then it was picked up by someone in the Press Association. And then it got into the Independent. All without credit to me. But we will build a bridge and move on. And no one asked why the leader of a political party, acting on behalf of his party, had made 35 policy commitments of a binding nation or a binding nature because they were a pledge, when it was obvious that he either hadn't read the document, and when I talked to a couple of the Fianna Fáilers who had signed it or were going to sign it, that was a fairly common opinion. Not of talking to them, and there was a very quick realisation of, you didn't read this. You have no idea what this thing contains. Head office sent it down to you, or the press office, and you were told to sign it, so you did. Or you're considering signing it.
Just for anybody who hasn't heard it, just not to give the details, but without exaggeration, the document would not have embarrassed Trotsky as a policy statement.
It's an incredible document.
And the idea of a Fianna Fáil leader, Fianna Fáil endorsing it, the only thing it didn't say was that the means of production shall be taken over by the state in order that they shall be used for the good of the workers. Other than that...
I did, out of, I will accept, primarily a sense of mischief. Because Robert Troy, who is Fianna Fáil's spokesperson on business and innovation and whatever gathering of business words they put together.
Yes.
Signed it and then retweeted and, you know, hashtag FemGen. FemGen, whatever it is. So I took some of the things from it.
Yeah.
And sent it as a message to the chairman of the board of ISME, the head of the Restaurants Association.
Right.
A couple of IBEC people. And just went, oh, by the way, Fianna Fáil's business spokesperson just said he supports a living wage, a four-day working week, better collective bargaining rights. The one I really love is a 40% quota for women on all corporate boards of Irish companies, which if you don't have, lads, you're going to have to fire 40% of your board. Or the 8% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions annually, which is above what the Green Party are calling for in what they call a radical step. yeah. And I sent it on, and the response I got was, We're taking this very seriously, but we'd be taking it far more seriously if we thought they had any they meant what they were saying. And it was obvious. They have no commitment to actually do this. They don't care what's in it. They're just saying it. And that, in most countries, would be a serious thing. You have a national party saying it's going to do a thing that it is so obvious they have no intention of doing that during the Q&A, no one even bothered asking them about it.
Yeah, but this is yet again another example of all of the packs of dogs across Ireland that did not bark in the night. These are the guardians of the Republic, who are the fourth estate, the press, deciding, why would you ask? I mean, it is an incredible thing. In an election, presented with a document, he signed off on it with specific policy proposals, none of which come anywhere near being Fianna Fáil policy. And nobody bothers to say, Micheál, why did you do that? Why, Micheál, why do you think? Micheál, you're happy that they're going to have quotas for council elections now, 8% reduction annually. 8% reduction annually in... and we're going to eliminate poverty, don't forget that.
Also, the one I personally loved, one, because I would share the rural Fianna Fáilers in particular would love this, a commitment to provide greater levels of traveller accommodation.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, here's the thing, I wrote an article, and I think it was called Ignoring Legal Advice, Fianna Fáil introduced their fourth housing policy of the week.
Yeah.
And they did. This document committed them to an emergency rent freeze. They came out on Monday, they supported an emergency rent freeze. They previously voted with Sinn Féin and the Dáil to bring one in. Amusingly enough, Fine Gael at that point said it was unconstitutional and Fianna Fáil still went ahead with it.
Yes.
So Monday, they support an emergency rent freeze. Tuesday, they come out and say they don't support it because it is unconstitutional, and that's apparently now good enough. Wednesday, they signed this pledge, which means they now support emergency rent freezes again. Thursday, they launch their manifesto and say they will not... I believe the phrase from Martin was, I'm not going to say I'll implement anything I can't bring in.
Right.
And says he won't bring in rent freezes. That is four different policies in 4 days.
Well, he should pay more attention to Fine Gael, because Fine Gael understand this. Having at least twice in the 80s, Fine Gael governments tried to bring in rent control legislation and were twice knocked back by the Supreme Court, who said, no, sorry, lads, it's unconstitutional. So they all know perfectly well. One might comment in passing, what the National Women's Council of Ireland knows about these things
it's not really feminism if it's not intersectional.
Yeah, well, you could ask somebody and discover that this is a subject where 97% of economists, left, right and centre, agree. It's a policy that not only doesn't work, but achieves the exact opposite of what you wanted to achieve.
No one can, outside of perhaps People Before Profit, maybe the more kind of red elements of the Green Party, definitely no one in the Labour Party, no one in Fine Gael, no one in Fianna Fáil should be able to sign this document.
No.
Because their party's policies not only wouldn't allow this, they're in many cases fundamentally opposed to what these people want to do.
They're antithetical to them.
And but it's not important.
No one cares. No one cares at all.
And then we sort of go, well, do you know what they were asked about repeatedly? Three times, in fact. Micheál Martin was asked three times during a press conference, would he bring in a gender-balanced cabinet? Three times.
Yeah.
And he very wisely made the correct point that, one, the Taoiseach does not announce the cabinet before the election. Two, he doesn't know who's going to be elected yet. And kind of a weird question, because you're sort of implying that doesn't matter who's there as long as they're a woman, which is kind of infantilising towards women. And then also made the point that if they end up in coalition, they can't simply turn around and go, all right, Green Party, only women. We need to split this up.
Now,
he was too kind to point out that there are 15 cabinet places, which mathematically would make a 50-50 split difficult. Now, you could bring that down. You could bring it down. They won't. But they could.
But since there are 77 genders anyway, it's a silly question. I thought we'd gone beyond this notion, this binary notion of, you know, and also, by the way, the same people who care desperately about this kind of split If, for example, he decided, okay, he's going to do a 50-50er on his, in his cabinet, and packed his cabinet with people like Mary Hanafin or Margaret Murphy O'Mahony, I can guarantee you they would not be happy bunnies.
No, you'd get a sort of Clinton.
They're not talking real.
Do you know, she wrote that book on, I think it was like spunky women,
yeah,
sassy women, and didn't include Thatcher.
Ah.
And when she was asked, she was like, well, you know, she wasn't really a sassy woman. And like, yeah.
I can tell you, Margaret Murphy O'Mahony, she's a sassy woman. I'm very fond of her. She is a proper, she's a proper firecracker. Sadly, I see not in a bit of trouble because Christie's son, Christopher, is now running in the same constituency for Fianna Fáil and seems to be favoured. Anyway, it is what it is. The week that's ahead of us will reveal more, I'm sure. But until it does, I suppose we should draw a veil over this.
Oh, just one quick point on the lack of seriousness in Irish politics.
Yeah.
It's not like this because of our politicians. It's like this because of Irish people. It's in a democracy, whether or not it's a good democracy, you get the people you deserve. And I would just make that point.
People say that, I don't know what. I don't even know really what it means. I don't know.
Like, if Irish people actually cared about things like this, about a political party obviously breaking its word, doing so in a reckless fashion, and then no one caring enough to even bring it up, they would vote against them. And they don't. So you get the same sort of politicians time in and time out. And it's not good for anyone, even Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael, because if it didn't happen, they would be way better parties.
Yeah. I think, sadly, there's a truth to that.
And but then again, I don't take any... I don't think that's a negative as such. I'm a great believer in the old line that democracy is the idea that the people know what they want and that's the job of the elected government to give it to them good and hard. So...
and they do and they will. And then they will...
And then we'll all die eventually anyway. So.
Then they regret it and they think we'll put somebody in who is almost identical, but we'll pretend that they'll be very different.
And we'll take the original person and we'll make them the head of an NGO, like the Irish Cancer Society or something. Something unimportant, but yeah, it makes you feel good about yourself.
Uh-huh. Well, on that cheerful... It's always a cheerful note, Gary, with us and particularly with you. We always... Any of them happy enough. I wish you a good...
I'm an immensely happy person.
Yeah.
That's why I make so many dark jokes, because they make no impact on me at all.
You're a stoic, and you practice apatheia. The world is beyond you, and you are unaffected by it. It's only poor bastards like me who are stuck in the world that have to deal with it.
I really recommend not doing that.
I think you're absolutely right, and I think we need to try harder, not... To be in the world, but not of the world, as the scriptures say.
I think that's the thing you really want to take from this podcast, Michael, and the listeners as well. You really just need to develop a sense of ataraxia, and that'll just get you through things.
And on that note, have a good Sunday, and goodbye till we meet again.
All the best.